You're listening to the Buzzer Beater with Jack Stern here on Castle Country Radio. The Super Bowl is just over 48 hours away now, but this has probably been the most peculiar Super Bowl week I can remember with everything happening in the NBA. Obviously, Anthony Davis requesting a trade earlier this week. Kristaps Porzingis being traded from the New York Knicks to the Dallas Mavericks. And what makes this Super Bowl week so strange is just the sheer fact that so much attention has been taken away from what's happening in Atlanta because of everything that's happened in the NBA. Twitter is blowing up. I mean, so much media coverage is being devoted to that rather than what's happening in Atlanta and all the Super Bowl coverage. It's been amazing. But in my opinion, the most important thing happening this week was a full slate of Pac-12 basketball games. I'll dive into that. I got an exclusive interview with Bill Hancock earlier in the week, executive director of the College Football Playoff. I asked him about the current format and why it's favorable, what he likes so much about it. I'll give you guys that later in the show, and I'll break down kind of my opinion on why maybe expanding the playoff would be a good thing, especially for the Pac-12 conference, which has struggled in bowl games and to get into the College Football Playoff. I'll dive into that, all that and more. But let me just start off with probably the craziest Pac-12 basketball game of last night. As the Colorado Buffaloes beat reporter for SB Nation, I was actually in attendance. It was the Oregon State Beavers and the Colorado Buffaloes. Crazy, crazy game. I mean, I think this was probably the best, most contested game I've seen all season long in the Pac-12. Oregon State came out ahead. They won 76-74. But this was a contest that featured 17 lead changes, 14 ties. I mean, it was just a roller coaster to say the least, but Oregon State persevered through some tough shooting stretches, and now all of a sudden, they're creeping up in the standings and are in third place in the Pac-12. With Colorado, the problems that have persisted all season long were presented in a microcosm on last night. I mean, inconsistent play between halves. Just as the case was against Stanford two games ago, they had a good first half, led by six at the break, but then they came out flat in the second half, struggled mightily from the three free throw line, but gave up a lot of points off turnovers, and the turnover differential between halves was noticeable. They only had three in the first, eight in the second. Shot just over 59% from the field in the first, 40% in the second. So this Jekyll and Hyde concept between halves was really on full display at a number of different levels. It has to be frustrating for this team. And Tad Boyle compared it to putting his finger in a dike, which actually was a very good comparison in a sense, because they shored up some issues, but all of a sudden these other ones started popping up. I don't think they're going to finish in last place. I think Washington State or Cal will hold that spot, but I think they'll finish in the bottom three. It's been a rough go for them. They have a favorable schedule with a lot of home games coming up, but from what I've seen, I don't see them getting out of this rut, especially with a McKinley Wright who's less than fully healthy. Starting lineup that really can't find some consistent point scores. There's been people who stepped up on a nightly basis. Shane Gatling was good last night. Evan Batty had 16 points, although he was in foul trouble. But this is a Colorado team that just really can't put together 40 minutes of good basketball, and that will kill you, especially in conference play. They were kind of able to mask the issues early on in the non-conference portion of their schedule, but it's really just spiraled out of control for the Buffs, and things have gone downhill. But looking at the other team that played last night, that their opponent, Oregon State, this was the first time all season I think they really stared adversity in the face. I mean, obviously they'd lost some games, but after a tough loss to Washington, kind of a must-win game for them if they wanted to stay in contention for first place in the Pac-12 South. Really struggled, gave up way too many points in the paint in the first half. And then they came out great in the second. Tress Tinkle, I think, is one of the best players in the Pac-12. I'm not even scared to say it at this point. Just when you think he's having a bad night, he comes out and plays great. And when his shots aren't falling, guess what? He'll get a steal. He'll get a transition basket. He knows how to beat you in so many different ways. Even on a night when it seemed like he really didn't even make that much of an impact, he still had 19 points. I mean, he's really good. You can tell he's a coach's son. Just watching him play, he never gets shell-shocked. When he misses a few shots, you know what? He'll keep shooting the rock because he knows he can knock those down. High basketball IQ, very fundamentally sound, and he's the leader of this Oregon State team, and he could propel them to an NCAA tournament berth or a Pac-12 title. Ethan Thompson also had a really good night last night. Oregon State, I think, is a team that's going to stick around in contention. I've said in previous episodes of the Buzzer Beater podcast that I thought it was the Pac-12 was a two-horse race between Arizona and Washington. I eat back those words about Arizona. I think Washington is a step above everyone else right now. I really do. They have played outstanding. Just like their football counterparts, they do it by playing great defense. No eye-popping qualities on that Washington team, which had another commanding victory over the one team behind them, USC, last night by 13 points. They lead the conference in steals, just like their football team, the Huskies football team, was atop in takeaways. Kind of a weirdly similar formula for success between the two teams within the program. Honestly, I have to give a lot of credit to Washington, the athletic director, and I have to give it to Hopkins has done an outstanding job with the Huskies since taking over last year. Just in his second season with the team. This is a guy who was a career assistant pretty much under Jim Boeheim at Syracuse. He was seen as his likely successor, but he came over to Seattle and took over a program that finished at the bottom of the conference pretty much every single year. They were the laughingstock. They couldn't get anything done. Yeah, they had one superstar, Markel Fultz, but the program never really took off, so to speak, in the way the football team had under Chris Peterson. But I have to give credit to the athletic director for hiring him, because he knows how to hire these coaches who will turn the programs around. Look, Seattle is not Southern California. It rains a ton. It's dark. It's cold. It's gray. But you know what's so impressive about the program? They know how to bring big name and good recruits in and find ways to develop them to build these powerhouses. They did it in football, where they've been in the top 10 the past 3 years. Now they're doing it in basketball. It's outstanding when you look at it. I mean, find me another team, with the exception of Syracuse, but when you take a look at overall programs, find me a team that is or a program that is located in a cold weather city that is able to build such powerful, great, dominant teams in football and in basketball, beside the Washington Huskies, in the Power Five. I don't think you could do it. Hopkins has brought in a very similar formula for success to Washington as he used under Boeheim at Syracuse. Just getting to work under that for the sustained period of time that he did, I think he got to see how good Boeheim was at utilizing that zone, that trap 3-2 zone, 2-3 at times, and they've been able to keep teams out of the paint, which is usually in basketball, universally across any level, where defenses will break down, and they've done great. He has maximized the potential of his team, even after not getting great recruits, and he knows how to develop them. Hats off to him. In my opinion, a testament to that is in the fact that they have one of the best well-rounded player in the Pac-12, in my opinion, in Noah Dickerson. I mean, he does everything. Outstanding rebound, gritty defender, can score inside, has a perimeter jump shot, not a very long one like some other big men, but it still does the job. And Huskies are quietly are going to eventually probably become one of the better teams in the country nationally. They're going to start to garner that type of attention just because of how good they've been of recent. Very, very impressive. It's hard not to be impressed with what they've done. Anyway, switching gears to Utah, they had a little bit of a tough loss to Oregon last night. But it wasn't all bad. They had four guys in double figures. Tim Allen, Cedric Bearfield, obviously, Jace Johnson. But they just couldn't close it. They stayed with Oregon the entire game. They just couldn't figure out ways to close the gap and take a lead or tie it up. It wasn't really a back and forth. It just, the whole game, it felt like Utah was playing from behind. And just like there was a saying universally in the press box here in Colorado that there's nothing more guaranteed than Utah struggling to win football games in November, I think the same goes for the basketball team in February. It's just they're very unpredictable. Just kind of similar to Colorado as well. I mean, not as sporadic between halves, a little more consistent, but still. You could get a Utah team that goes out and upsets Washington, or you could get one that goes out and lays an egg against Oregon at home. So, yeah, I think they just need to find ways to iron out the consistency and just play better on a nightly basis. Right now, I don't think they're in contention to win the conference unless they start winning some games. But they can with 10 left to play, they can easily climb back into the race. It's not by any means over. But like I mentioned at the top, I was able to catch up with Bill Hancock earlier in the week, and I talked about, A, the current format of the college football playoff, asking him why that was so much more favorable than the BCS series or a 6 or an 18 playoff. And I also kind of wanted to dive into the competition of this year's college football playoff because, let's face it, none of the games were really that entertaining. All of them were double-digit wins for the team that won. So I think that speaks to the competition. But anyway, I'll stop talking, and here's what he had to say.
When the university presidents created the college football playoff, they considered other options besides four teams. And they settled on four because it would not have as much effect on the regular season as other formats might have. Also, they wanted to protect the academic calendar, and they wanted to protect the bowl experience across the board.
You still feel that way after a year in which the games weren't exactly as competitive as a lot of people would have liked?
Oh, you bet. It's a mistake to put too much emphasis on what happens in bowl games at every level. And, yeah, this year's semifinal games were not competitive, but Clemson was really, really good, as we saw in the championship game.
Interesting words there from Bill Hancock regarding the state of the college football playoff and why the committee ultimately came to their decision and what they're going to do going forward as well. Let me just say this. First of all, yes, I do agree. Clemson was leaps and bounds above everyone this year. I don't think there's really that much question about that, especially after watching them completely outplay Alabama for an entire game. I do believe they were easily the best team this year, but at the same time, the sheer fact that the games were so uncompetitive makes me think that getting one of these lower seeds in, you know, a 6 or an 8 or something like that, one of the teams that wasn't ranked as highly, like say Washington at number 8. Okay, that's maybe a little bit of a Pac-12 bias there, but let me play through the theoreticals here. Maybe having one of those guys go up against Alabama and following this NBA seeding format where best team plays worse, 1 plays 8, 2 plays 7, so on and so forth. Maybe that makes it more entertaining because obviously it wasn't very good this year. So why not see if one of the lower seeds can pull off an upset? And on that same note, one of the things that makes college basketball so exciting is that upsets happen every March. Look at Loyola, Chicago, Florida Gulf Coast a few years ago. These are teams that pulled off these Cinderella-type stories where they upset a Goliath of the sport and made national headlines. Why can't we try to garner that excitement, that type of excitement in college football? I don't know, just food for thought. If a team like Oklahoma can't go out and play competitively against Alabama, then, you know, why not see if someone lower can? I just believe that it's getting less and less competitive. I mean, obviously there's an exception where Alabama will get in as the 4 seed like they did last year and go on a run, but that's a little bit different. You know, I understand what he's saying about protecting the players in the university. I do believe that's a good point. Having a longer playoff forces the teams to play another game, and that's just a taxing impact on these players' bodies, especially in the game of football. Okay, that makes sense. I'm buying that argument. And it's hard as a student athlete. Okay, that's fair. But at the same time, if you're talking about entertainment and competition and what format I think is going to be the best, I really do think expanding it is a good option. And in terms of buying into bowl games and what they mean, yeah, I agree with him in a sense. I don't agree as much about the higher level bowl games. I think the college football playoff is kind of a different beast, so to speak, than the Gasparilla Bowl or the Cheez-It Bowl or even some of the other New Year's Six games like the Holiday Bowl. Yeah, I mean, you have these joke games like the Cheez-It Bowl where there's 6 interceptions and backup quarterbacks are coming in and the stands are empty and it's just a really strange thing and you can't really buy too much into the results of the game. Yeah, I understand where he's coming from on that. But at the higher levels, these are supposed to be the elite teams of college football duking it out for a national championship. That was the goal when they created a football playoff and there wasn't this computerized system like the BCS series featured. Just food for thought here. I do think that they should expand it. It would be more entertaining for the fans, better for competition, and I think ultimately you would get the best teams. Especially given the fact that there's so much debate about who the best 4 are. If you expand it to 6 or 8, I don't think there's as much debate about who gets in. This year, Georgia was left out, despite the fact that they gave Alabama the best run for their money up until Clemson beat them in the national championship game. So, yeah, I just think that this would create less controversy, make everyone happier, and to synopsize this thought, just make the sport better. It would just make the concept of a playoff better. I really do believe that. Speaking of which, talking about bowl games, though, the Pac-12 has been pretty much an embarrassment when it comes to the college football playoff and bowl games in general. The conference has had a losing record the past few years. They've made the least appearances in the college football playoff since its inception. And to my point about expanding the playoff, I think it's become a little bit too lopsided in terms of conference representation. Let me just break down the stats here. SEC teams have made 6 appearances in the playoff. ACC teams have made 5. The Big Ten and the Big 12 have made 3. And the Pac-12 have made 2. Now, I think the Pac-12 is probably the worst conference in the Power 5. I mean, I'm not trying to defend that argument. But putting Washington up against Alabama could be an entertaining game. Putting, you know, one of these bottom, you know, the best Pac-12 team up against a team from the ACC, SEC, Big Ten, whatever. I just think it's good for the sport to have more even distribution across conferences. But at the same time, I don't know if that's necessarily attainable if you keep a 4-team playoff. Because it seems like SEC teams get in, and ACC teams get in disproportionately more than the other three Power 5 conferences. So maybe that's a way to eliminate the disparity. As a whole, college football is about seeing good competition. And when teams are left out of the top bowl games, teams from, you know, other Power 5 conferences are not represented in the playoff and, you know, they're left out. I just don't think that's good for the sport. I mean, I understand there is probably a talent gap. I mean, let's not forget Washington lost to Auburn at the beginning of the year. Auburn, by their standards, had an absolutely awful season in the SEC. So I think that goes to show the talent gap. Yes, it was game number one. And yes, teams were both finding their rhythm still. But on the same note, I just think it's become increasingly bad that other conferences are not as strongly represented as the SEC and the ACC. That was especially true last year when you had two SEC teams, an ACC team, and a Big Ten team. I mean, so two conferences are left on the sideline while one conference has two teams in. Now, the argument I'm making is not that it's bad to have multiple teams from a conference in the playoff. I don't believe that. I just think it should be expanded so that other conferences can be represented because I think it's good for the sport, ultimately. That's kind of my two cents on the situation. Anyway, we have a really exciting slate of Pac-12 basketball games coming up tomorrow. Oregon and Colorado will be duking it out. Obviously, there's some peculiar event going on Sunday that a lot of people are interested in. I don't think I've actually heard of it, but that should be an entertaining one as well. Oregon State travels to Salt Lake City to play Utah in a game that I think should be very, very entertaining tomorrow. The loser may be, for all intents and purposes, out of the Pac-12. The race for the Pac-12 title. So it should be a really good game. And there's no way not to be entertained this weekend. So for everyone listening, go out to the supermarket, get some food, go inside, invite some friends over, chef it up, lock into your couch, and get ready for a great weekend of sports between the games tomorrow and the Super Bowl Sunday. It's going to be a great ride. And I'll be back next week to recap all of it on another edition of the Buzzer Beater Podcast with Jack Stern.